and welcome back to Franklin Covey's twice weekly podcast on Leadership with Scott Miller. That's me. I'm your host and interviewer. Every week, twice weekly, on Tuesdays and Fridays, we tape and release episodes using Franklin Covey's Megawatt Spotlight as the world's most trusted leadership firm with a global footprint, helping organizations and individuals around the world create better cultures, how to build the bench strength of leadership, how to instill the behaviors of high-trust leaders throughout their organization. I'm privileged to be able to also take that spotlight and turn it on to people that are thought leaders, both inside our company and outside of the firm, that we think can help make you a better leader, a better entrepreneur, a better solopreneur, a better parent, friend, colleague, or just a great contributor to society where all of us are trying to identify and accomplish our own great purposes. Today, I'm fortunate to shine this spotlight on to an Olympic athlete, and she corrected me in the book, or she corrected the reader. She is not a former Olympian. Once you are an Olympian, you are always an Olympian. I loved this book by Mary Sanders. It's called 9 Lives by 35, an Olympic gymnast inspiring story of reinvention. Mary Sanders, welcome to On Leadership.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Scott, for having me. Quite an honor.
So do you ever wear all those medals at once that are in all those cases behind you? And do you stand up straight? Tell us a little bit about your journey as an Olympic gymnast. Remind us about some of the pivots you made. And I think you have a very unrelatable journey with lots of relatable lessons in life. And we're going to explore what it means to have 9 Lives by 35. Walk us through your journey. First, talk a little bit about what's going on behind you for those of us who may be watching on camera or listening by audio.
Thank you. Well, yeah, you know, every night I put them on and just remind myself of all my accomplishments. No, I'm totally kidding. Actually, I had all these medals from my gymnastics career just in a box up until COVID. I think even at my mom's place. And then, you know, COVID hits us, we're all at home, and it's like, what are we going to do with our time? So it was actually a gift for my family, and they kind of decorated my office. So it was very nice of them. A little bit of a shrine, but it's a good conversation starter. So that's where all those medals are from. And I was born a gymnast. My father was my coach, my mentor, my everything, my idol. And I was literally born doing flips and twists and splits. And I continued doing artistic gymnastics, which is with the bars and the beam, the Simone Biles sport, right? Up until I was around 8 years old. And I was okay. I had to work very hard. I wasn't naturally talented. I was always a bit of an underdog. Very tall. I wasn't as muscular as I should have been. So I did all right in the sport. Unfortunately, my father passed away from cancer when I was 8 years old. So that was a big shift in my life. Probably the biggest traumatic experience of my life at that point. And he was not just my father. He was my coach and my idol and my everything. So at that point, that was the first time in my life I really had to reinvent myself and do a major shift. So I actually switched to rhythmic gymnastics, which is with the ribbons and the balls and the hoops. And I always explain it as the, you know, the Will Ferrell sport, if you've seen the movie Old School. So I switched to that sport. It just better suited my body type. And it kind of, it kind of got me to where I am today, even though I really didn't want to make the switch. And I thought my father would roll over in his grave and I'd never become his little Olympian as a rhythmic gymnast. But turns out it was better suited for me. And I did make the Olympics and I did compete for USA at the 2004 Athens Olympics in Greece. So many ups and downs, many twists and turns, single mother raising 3 kids, working very hard. To get me to achieve my Olympic dream. There was many obstacles in the way. I had to switch from competing for Canada to competing for the U.S. I was labeled a traitor along the way. Switching countries wasn't so common back then. It just better suited, you know, my family's needs financially. My father was a U.S. gymnast. I was following in his footsteps, doing what's best for me. But of course, not everyone is going to be happy for decisions you make in life. And that was a lesson I learned pretty early on in my life as an early athlete and gymnast in my career. I think we have to make decisions for ourselves that's best for us, even if it doesn't make everyone else happy. So competed in Athens. I competed on my 19th birthday. So So that was a good way to celebrate my birthday, and that was kind of the end of my athletic gymnastics career.
Mary, let's talk a bit more about that, because living in Salt Lake City, Utah, where we have hosted the Olympics and likely will again in the not-so-distant future, there are a lot of Olympians, former Olympians, current Olympians. I happen to know a few because of our time in Park City, Utah. And remind everyone the difficulty of pivoting out of being, you know, a aspiring accomplished Olympian, because some people pivot well, they can monetize their success and their brand in other areas. Some go back to living very normal lives. Some don't have skills outside of their sport and have to figure out, what am I going to do to support myself? Talk a little bit about what it's like to transition out of that soul all-consuming trajectory, having won or lost, because you've done a remarkable job of reinventing yourself. We're going to talk about the lives you've had and how people can identify their own lives. Any lessons that you would teach from how you reinvented yourself several times into a very successful entrepreneur, entertainer, businesswoman? Take that wherever you'd like to go. What happens when you step down from Athens and fly home?
It's a really great question, Scott, and it's partially why I wrote the book. I think there is this sort of silent society, and it's a hard one for athletes or anyone who's achieved a lot of success early on in life to find the next step, to find their next passion and direction in life. It's extremely difficult. And myself, like many other Olympians, I'm sure that you know, devote a bit, their very first part of their life, their childhood and their teens, to their sport. And that's what I did. I lived and breathed gymnastics. You know, my father was my coach, and like literally I was born doing gymnastics and that was it. So when I achieved what, you know, the goal was, the Olympics, I was so happy. I was like, finally felt like, okay, I can be normal now. I can, you know, not focus on gymnastics completely. And I still have nightmares to this day where I'm competing at the World Championships and I didn't make the Olympics. And it's like, well, now what do? I can't even imagine if I didn't even compete at the Olympics, how my life would have changed. And I know there's a lot of athletes out there that maybe didn't peak at the right time, didn't make the Olympics. And I think transitioning from that into society is even harder. I was blessed enough that I did go and compete at the Olympics. I didn't win the gold. I wasn't, you know, the fan favorite. Rhythmic gymnastics is an Eastern European dominated sport. So I did finish in 15th, which was the highest placing of any North American at that time. But, you know, it didn't get me any Nike sponsorships or anything like that. So I had a long road ahead of me. I was set to go to university, be normal, and get a Bachelor's of Arts degree and figure out what to do with my life. But something in the back of my mind just knew, you know, I wasn't ready for that. I still wanted to do more and perform and use my body. So I was lucky enough that Cirque du Soleil scouted me. They watched me compete in Athens. They saw me on tour afterwards, and they scouted me to work for them and be in one of their touring shows. So I was lucky to compete at the Olympics and have a bit of a buffer into society and into the working world, getting paid per show, you know, having an income, being on the road, expenses paid. So I had a nice buffer into the working society in that way. A lot of athletes don't have that. They can compete at the Olympics, win the gold, and then just, that's it. And then the next day, you're no longer a swimmer or whatever. Like, you're done. And it's, if you haven't thought ahead of time what's next, it is extremely shocking to the system. And then there's the athletes, you know, maybe like myself, who don't win the gold, but they did compete at the Olympics, but then they come home and there's no next step. And it's just, it's really mentally draining and it can be very depressing. I did go through a bit of depression and anxiety, even at Cirque du Soleil, because, you know, you're this whole identity. I'm a gymnast and now I'm in Cirque, but I'm still Mary Sanders, the Olympian, but no one cares. And I think I realized early on, it's like, no one cares. You have to do what you have to do. You have to work hard. There's no shortcuts in life. You just have to have this constant forward momentum attitude and figure out what the next step is. Don't put your eggs all in one basket. And I hope that's something I can, you know, help athletes or anyone transitioning in life, is we need to have this constant forward momentum and not put all our eggs in one basket. And that's something I've tried to do constantly. I've had this job working in entertainment, but I also have many other avenues that I enjoy and have passions in and that have also turned into careers. So I think it is a bit of a stigma, this transitioning from sport or a very high level success into a normal society. It can give you a lot of anxiety and depression. And I think we just need more tools to help people make those transitions and reinvent their life. In my book, I end each chapter with the three R's. And it's something that, you know, as I've reflected on my life, really helped me get out of that slump, that depression, and just not even wanting to get out of bed that day. So asking yourself every morning, what is your reason? Why am I getting out of bed today? And if you're not excited to get out of bed, you need to find something that'll make you excited. And that is to reinvent your life or reinvent yourself that day. Do something you would have never done normally that day. I think that's a reason to reinvent yourself and get excited to get out of bed. And then knowing you're right. You're right to do all those things, to change your trajectory in life and really just find something you love to do, no matter if everyone thinks you're crazy and it's a horrible idea. I think it's just find what makes you excited in life and just go for it.
With three young sons who are kicking my ass every day, sometimes it is champagne that is my reason to exist that day. Known as a mimosa in the morning time. Not on work days, just on Mondays through Sundays. Your journey is wholly unrelatable, but your pivots, your reinvention, your stamina is relatable. I'd like you to teach us, for the school teacher, for the project manager, for the COO, for the school superintendent, whoever it is out there, the digital designer that's having difficulty, perhaps they came off a high, maybe they had a downsizing, or they were fired, or they need to reinvent their skills. Will you teach us some of the lessons that you espouse in Nine Lives by 35? Just take a generic audience and say, these are some of the things people can use to motivate themselves, to reinvent themselves, regardless of where they are in their career or their life.
Right. You know, I went from Cirque du Soleil to becoming a recruiter. Like, I recruited all kinds of people into different industries, into finance and all this stuff. Like, the most random transition you can imagine, I've done it. And I knew coming out of Cirque du Soleil, I worked for them for 10 years. I, you know, didn't want to be 7 years old and still in clown makeup. So I knew I had to figure out what was next. So I think if you're on the edge, on the end of something, a career or a path, you know, before ending that, start thinking of the next path. I think what's harder is when you quit or you get fired, then you're like, oh my God, what's next? But if you have a little bit of a buffer to fall onto, I think that really helps. In Cirque du Soleil, I studied public relations. So I knew, okay, if I got really injured or, you know, this was just done tomorrow, I'll go into public relations or I'll go into that path. So had a bit of a buffer and something to fall back on. I know that's really hard to do when you're really head down in a career and you're like, this is my everything. But I always think a backup plan or something small to fall back on is helpful in those drastic or ever-changing times. So in leaving Cirque, I went into the corporate world. And I mean, I started from the bottom, sales job, recruitment job. And it was humbling, right? You go to the Olympics and you go to Cirque du Soleil. I'm on stage 10 shows a week, standing ovations. And then it's like, I'm at a desk. No one cares. And you're like one in a million doing this little sales job. But I just knew to get ahead, I just had to work hard. And I think that's another thing is when you're making a big transition, you can't get discouraged and you have to work hard. Even if you're starting something totally from the bottom, you work hard and you humble yourself and you just go forward, constant forward momentum. And that's what I did. And eventually I recruited myself into the job I've been in for the last 10 years, working alongside one of the sharks from Shark Tank, Robert Herjavec, and from Dragon's Den in Canada. So, and it was just a fluke moment. And I think following your gut is huge in those moments. You know, why is this chapter of my life ending? There's a reason for it. And you got to just take some time to reflect and be like, oh, it ended because I'm not supposed to be there anymore. And be positive about it. Don't be so sad and depressed about that chapter ending. Be excited about the next chapter. So being depressed in my recruitment job actually got me to my 10-year career now. And it was just randomly, I sent my resume as I saw a job posting. I was recruiting EAs for big CEOs at the time. And I just randomly sent my resume. Didn't even know who Robert Herjavec was at the time. And I got the job. And it was just this fluke gut moment that I knew I had to send my resume. And I had never sent my resume for a job that I was supposed to be hiring someone for. So it's these fluke moments, follow your gut and have something to fall back on. And just try and celebrate when one chapter closes, what could be next. I think that's very important.
I love the fact that you recruited yourself for the job that you are in. I think it's just a great mindset for people to have. You may have to recruit yourself into the job that you need. You've lived your life, obviously, very publicly, somewhat from a distance as a Cirque du Soleil artist and performer, as an Olympic athlete. We see you on TV. We see you on the competing stage, if you will. And then you decide to write this extraordinarily vulnerable book about your mom's marriages, your upbringing, your father's passing, your own somewhat tumultuous relationships with partners and such, your finances, your reinvention. I mean, you've talked very openly. Was that easy? Was that difficult? What was your why for the reason to choose to write a very vulnerable book that I think will give voice to everybody who reads it, whether they are a male or female or an Olympic athlete or not? You kind of give people permission to own their successes, own their failures. Why did you choose to be so vulnerable?
Thank you. It wasn't easy. That's the number one answer there. I had many versions of my memoir. The first version, I think you could call it very surface. I was, my whole life I've been, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Hard shell, you know, it's the only way to kind of make it as a gymnast, at least in my day. So being vulnerable, being emotional didn't come naturally to me. So in writing it the first time, I can say I didn't dive deep enough. It took a lot of time to peel back layers. I literally had amnesia from a lot of experiences in my life, from, you know, my marriages failing, my mom's, my gymnastics career, some, you know, abuse I went through. I literally just blocked it all out. Like I think a lot of people do, whether you're an athlete or not. I think we go through traumas or we go through certain things in life and we block them out. But those things do shape us into who we are today. And I never really was one to go to therapy or anything like that. And this book was extremely therapeutic for me and it helped me understand myself more. And I think it helped people around me understand me more. I know people from different phases and lives of my life, right? I know gymnasts, I know acrobats, I know entertainment people. So no one understood the full Mary. And I think that was a big inspiration for me to write it, especially having two kids of my own now. I wanted them to understand their full mom. And I just think, yeah, it was extremely hard. And I still wake up today like, oh, what did I do? Like, why did I write this? And why did I divulge everything about myself? But like you said, Scott, I don't just want to appeal to athletes or to females, or I want to appeal to everyone that our past is our past. It doesn't define our future. And as cliche and everyone says that, it's very true. You know, becoming an Olympian, that's great. That's wonderful. But I want to be so much more than that. And I'm not perfect. And I think on the outside, maybe people portray me as that or trying to be perfect. And it's absolutely not true. I've made many mistakes, which you can read about. And I think all those mistakes is what really teaches you and gets you to where you are today. And I think all of us can relate to that. We're trying to be the best person we can be, but we have a lot of failures along the way. And I definitely did. And I've seen a lot, I've experienced a lot. And I just want people to know it'll be okay. And I think now I'm the happiest I've ever been, but I have been through a lot to get to this point. And there is light on the other side.
Mary, I'm curious naturally about this idea of thinking of your own life in stages of different lives. We're all going to have different lives. And I never really thought about that until I read your book. I'm 55. I feel like I've kind of had two lives, you know, before marriage and kids and after marriage and kids. I was married later in life, 41. I'm now 55. And your book title is Nine Lives by 35. What have you learned from the nine lives that you've led? Maybe you want to tell us what some of them are. But I want the conversation to benefit our listeners is through you reminding us and teaching us why it's valuable to recognize we have different lives. We have some that are past, we have some that are we're in, we have more that are coming we may not know yet. Take that wherever you'd like it to go so that our listeners can right now be thinking about how many lives have they had, how many will they have, what's next, what to expect, what to prepare for. Riff on that.
Right. I think I learned, you know, in a way, I was stuck on this gymnast, I'm an Olympian life for a very long time. And it wasn't helping me move the ball forward. It's, you know, if I was just, I'm Mary and I'm an Olympian and that's enough in life, right? How am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to move forward? And I think it's great that, you know, athletes, they go to the Olympics, they have so much success. But if you get stuck in one phase of your life, you're never going to evolve. And I don't think you're going to live to your potential. So being Mary the Olympian, working at Cirque du Soleil 10 years, I was really stuck in this identity of that. But that's enough. That's me. And then when I got out of Cirque, having Mary Olympian on my resume should get me where I want to go. And it didn't at all. I had to start from the bottom. I really had to, you know, hammer down my public relations education. And I had to start from the bottom. And having different lives is very humbling because you do have to close one chapter. You got to open another one and start from the bottom again. And I think if you're able to humble yourself and you are able to start from the bottom again, you learn so much along the way. And I've been, you know, blessed to have an incredible mentor in Robert Herjavec the last 10 years. Literally, I feel like I have a business degree now because I've worked alongside one of the most successful entrepreneurs of all time. And it's just really that something he always says that resonates with me is all life owes you is an opportunity. No one owes you anything. You're not going to get any favors. You got to work hard, and that's the only thing that's going to propel you forward. And I think it does help to look at your life in different chapters and different phases. My 9 lives, they're so different, but it got me to where I am today. And now I'm really clear on where I want to go. I'm very clear on my goals and where I want to go. And I think acknowledging all the different chapters and why I did that, what brought me here and all of that really helps me see a much clearer future now. So I think perhaps that is a bit of a key is let's look at our life in stages, why those stages happened, why those ups and downs happened. Where am I right now? Am I in a bit of a down, or am I in a trajectory up? We're in a bit of a down. We got to reinvent. We got to figure out how we're going to get ourselves back up. And that might be humbling, starting from the bottom, going in, follow your gut in a career path that you would never think you would do. Write that book. I don't know. Do whatever that, you know, you've wanted to do for a long time, but you haven't. Just make that decision to do it that day, and it might take you somewhere. I think taking risks and following your gut is the key to a successful future and having many different trajectories, not putting all our eggs in one basket. And I think that'll help you evolve and have many different lives.
Mary, I want to finish with, a really valuable question because you are uniquely qualified to address this. And this is about the role parents and caregivers give, the advice they give into their young children that have a latent, an obsessed, a middle-level passion for a sport. You mentioned your dad was a very accomplished athlete. He was your coach and your mentor in gymnastics. He passed tragically from cancer at the age of 8. You write about that story in your book. It was quite tender, especially having a son who is 9, my youngest, myself. I was just kind of envisioning what that meeting would look like when my wife called them together and the phone rang. It was very tender. You've written a beautiful book. I highly, highly recommend people read this book. I have no natural interest in Olympics or gymnastics per se. I've interviewed several, but I found your book to be a great parenting book. Interesting. I want you to give advice to all the parents, like my wife and I, that have 3 young boys. They're all obsessed with tennis, and we're going bankrupt over tennis lessons and tennis camps and tennis, you name it. My tennis bill is larger than my mortgage right now.
I hear you.
What advice do you give parents to calibrate, to recognize when is it their child's decision? How do you tease out the life lessons? How do you know when to go all in because they want to go all in, but recognize that very few people are going to end up being an NBA star or get a D1 college scholarship? Just what advice would you give to caregivers and parents around making sure that all the time and effort and energy is healthy for your child?
Yeah, it's been worth it. No, that's a great question. Obviously, I was born into the sport of gymnastics. I was called a little Olympian from birth. So I was, you know, destined to be a gymnast. And whether that's healthy or not for a child, I'm not sure. For me, it worked out. It was a very difficult road, lot of ups and downs. I can't say I'd wish my life on my daughter. I have a son and a daughter. I can't say I want her to go through what I went through to get to the Olympics, to be honest. And also having a single mother and three kids, you know, I think my aspiration with the Olympics and everything that costed and all the trips to Europe, everything took a toll on my brothers. So it's a interesting conversation. I have a lot of friends who ask me the same. Oh, is your daughter going to go to the Olympics? Or is your son going to be a gymnast and go to the Olympics? And, you know, they are both enrolled in gymnastics today. I'm not going to lie. My son's in artistic and my daughter's in artistic and rhythmic once a week. I don't have them going five times a week or anything. But I think as parents, we do instill a little bit of our own goals on them. We want them to succeed. We want them to follow in our footsteps, per se, in a certain aspect. I think as long as the child has the passion. So, you know, Scott, if your kids are like, can't wait to go to tennis, I want to go play more, you know, I think as parents, we got to support them in that. And I think it's very hard, though, financially, nowadays, more so than when I was a gymnast, it is so expensive, sports. And we want to give our kids everything. We want to see them succeed. But the financial burden on the parents is, it's extraordinary now. And I mean, the odds of becoming the next Roger Federer or the next Simone Biles are quite low. I don't think we need to look at it like, oh, are they going to be first place at the Olympics? I think we need to look at it as probably this sport is going to teach them things that I could never teach them and that school could never teach them. And it's that discipline. And I think even if I never made the Olympics or anything, I would still have been molded in a certain way that I am today to be extremely hardworking because of sport. Not because I had to study on this exam or all. I think sport teaches children so much. And I think it keeps them out of trouble. And so, you know, as long as your kids have that passion, I think it's the best thing you could ever do for them.
Mary, you are a class act. I am very impressed with all of your accomplishments in life.
Thank you.
But I'm more impressed with your resilience, your tenacity, your determinism, your grit, your will to be fearless, to reinvent yourself, to take the humility of moving from the Olympics at the Athens and to become a recruiter, that you recruited your own self into the job, that now you are partnered with one of the most iconic entrepreneurs. You are an inspiration to everybody who is listening and watching that feels like, you know what, maybe I need a reinvention. Maybe it's time for me to pivot and pivot into something that I can't see or even know about right now. I highly recommend the lessons in your very vulnerable book, 9 Lives by 35, an Olympic gymnast inspiring story of reinvention. Mary Sanders, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And we'll see you back here next week for a new conversation on leadership.